So what is meant by oil and gas and other minerals? That's really what you get into in a lot of the case law here. Of course, if you're up in the panhandle, you might see more deeds that sever off the oil versus the gas, and you can get into disputes over what does oil mean, what does gas mean, and there certainly is case law there. And that's outside the scope of what I want to talk about. I want to talk about what we see in so many deeds and in so many leases, oil, gas, and other minerals. So what are the other minerals? Well, we have a pretty good amount of case law on that, and what we eventually end up with is really two tests, an early test and a later test. But this isn't a scenario where like, oh, that's the early test, forget it, because the early test is still applied. It depends on when your deed was executed. If you have a deed that's executed before this Mosier case we're going to talk about later, so before then, you're going to be under this earlier test. If it's executed later, we're going to be looking afterwards. And so, and specifically, I'm talking the deed that severs the minerals from the surface. And so, you know, I think most minerals in a lot of the oil-bearing counties probably severed before 1983. So this surface destruction, this early test, definitely is not just old and forgotten about. So what is that test? Well, the courts described it as an intent-based inquiry that would balance the property rights. And what it really came down to was a couple factors. The first factor being the proximity of the substance involved to the surface. So for instance, if you're looking at some sort of substance and you're wondering if it is a mineral, and if that's your dispute, you'd look, okay, what is that substance? What is its proximity to the surface? If it's within, I believe the cases are saying 3 to 4 feet, you're just going to say that it's, as a matter of law, part of the surface. If it's within about 200 feet, then you're going to go to a second element, which is whether any reasonable extraction method would result in substantial destruction of the surface. If so, it was considered a constituent part of the surface estate, and if it would not, then it was part of the mineral estate. The issue that can arise with this is just some really interesting or confusing, maybe I should say, problems. It's just maybe not ideal to have this test. For instance, it requires a case-by-case analysis. Okay, well, most deed interpretation cases are a case-by-case analysis, right? I mean, that's what an intent inquiry is, an intent-based inquiry. Looking at the four corners and all this case law we have just seems like over and over and over in recent years, emphasizing that deed construction is all about intent-based, right? So what's the problem? The problem is that it can lead to a lack of certainty in land titles. So for instance, if you don't know if a substance is part of the surface of the mineral estate until you go examine how close it is to the surface, I mean, you don't have real certainty in your land titles, at least with respect to that substance. It also can be like kind of non-intuitive. So for example, say that you have a particular substance and you wonder if it's a mineral or not based on your deed. You may not know based on the nature of the substance. I mean, it may not have anything to do with the nature of the substance, its common understanding, or its science, but instead it's going to be based on how you might extract it. The cases that are out there don't really say that it's the extraction methods available at the time. So I guess theoretically there's an argument that, you know, 50 years after the deed's executed, maybe extraction methods change and something is no longer a mineral. So it's kind of some interesting problems that can arise there. And another interesting problem with uranium is just one example. There's a lot of methods to recover that. Some methods will result in surface destruction. Some methods might not, such as leaching. So then we get to this case by the Texas Supreme Court, Mosier, that looked at some of these problems and came up with a different test that they said would apply forward-looking only. And I'll save the details from the case and kind of jump to some of the black-letter law for time, but basically as a matter of law, included in the mineral estate is oil, gas, the conclusion in that case was uranium, also deep, lignite, iron, and coal. That was a reference back to some earlier cases they wanted to leave intact, so deep lignite, iron, and coal, and also other substances. Again, that's kind of our main focus here. So other substances, if they are a mineral under the ordinary natural meaning. So what does that mean? Okay, so maybe it's not just immediately just super clear based on that, but you look at a common understanding, you look at scientific understanding, you look at what the understanding of the word is and how it's commonly used. So it doesn't matter how close it is to the surface here, except for, of course, lignite, coal, and iron. It doesn't matter how you mine it. So a substance, if it's a mineral one day, it's going to be a mineral another day under this test. And so that can lead to some more certainty there. As a matter of law, the case also said the surface estate is going to include water, building stone, limestone, caliche, surface shale, sand, gravel, and also this phrase, near-surface lignite, iron, and coal. This test makes a little bit more sense in some ways. If you look at uranium, again, just as that example, I mean, whether you're mining it with surface destructive means or leaching it, I mean, it's not going to change whether it's a mineral or not. And there still can be some unique issues with some other substances, such as like lithium, selenium, stuff that's dissolved in water, but it's really not an ownership issue as much as it is then like a property rights issue and the fact that you're going to be producing water that's owned by the water that's owned by the surface estate, yet you have something that might be a mineral dissolved inside. But so what's the nature of ownership? Of course, we have the rule of capture, fundamentals course, right? So you don't own the rock in place, but instead you own a fair right to recover that. And so that's a balancing act to recognize both that a mineral interest is a vested possessory interest, yet oil and gas is fugitive, right? It's movable, fugacious.